right, welcome in, welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio here in College Park. I'm your host, Jack Wynn. You are listening to Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the Maryland area. So, it's been a while since we've been on air. A lot has happened. I'm excited to be back. We're officially in basketball season. Well, we've been in basketball season, but in terms of media focus, all the attention's on college basketball, the NBA, the Olympics just happened. So much has been going down. I'm excited to talk about all of it. We are going to jump right in. So, Maryland basketball had a tough loss yesterday to Rutgers. And that was a game that felt winnable at a lot of times. And, you know, when you think about the context of the season, that win, I think, would have really meant something for this team from a culture standpoint. Because when you look at how this year has played out, the Terps had a really, really rough start. They were, at one point, the lowest-ranked team in all Power 5 conference schools. They just looked like they were playing bad basketball. It was sloppy. They didn't really have an identity. But these last bunch of weeks, if not a month by now, the team has really started to turn things around. They've been winning more games. They've been playing together. They've been looking like a real team. And they've pulled off a few surprising wins. And you would hope that a game against Rutgers, a team who is at the very least on their level now, they would have been able to pull one of those out. I thought the end of the game was a little bit sloppy. That last possession for the Terps, you didn't really get the look that you wanted. So maybe that's on Buzz. You got to draw something up a little better. But there's still a lot to like. The biggest thing that the Terps are missing out on as a result of this game is they had a chance to put themselves in a comfortable position of getting a first-round bye in the Big Ten tournament, because those bottom four teams have to play a play-in. And now with this loss to Rutgers, that position is really in jeopardy. So they've got another game tomorrow. It's going to be difficult against Wisconsin, but Maryland's going to have to try to pull one or two of these, you know, couple rabbits out of a hat if they're going to go get that bye back. Couple shout-outs. Andre Mills has been really unbelievable so far. His in-season turnaround has been really beautiful to see. I guess I wouldn't call it a turnaround. It's more of a progression. But when you get a freshman playing at this level, especially the way that he was able to turn up in the second half, it's very exciting. So if you're thinking about the future, Mills is going to be a really nice piece for the Terps. Him, Darius Adams, a couple of the other guys, whoever we end up bringing in. And the rest of the season, obviously it's a bit of a sunken ship at this point unless they pull off some miracle in the Big Ten tournament. But establishing a culture, establishing an identity, playing Buzz Williams-style basketball, that's really all you want from Maryland for these last, you know, few games, last stretch of the season. And then you can start looking to next year. All right. So, moving on to the NBA. My friends and I have been watching Game of Thrones recently. I don't know if any of you guys remember, but Bleacher Report used to do this little YouTube series called Game of Zones, where they basically just attributed NBA stuff into a Game of Thrones context. That was fun. So we're going to play a game of zones style ranking here, where we're going to talk about the top contenders in each conference, who's currently got the throne in each conference, and who's got the best chance now that we're well past midway in the season at this point to win the championship. So, starting in the West, currently sitting on the throne, the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this one shouldn't surprise anybody. They've been the best team all year. They're the defending champions. They have a dozen guys who they're comfortable playing. They're all young. They're all improving. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander very well might be the best player in the world right now. There's very little reason to doubt the Thunder at this point. They have had a weak spot, which brings me to your top contender in the West, House Spurs. And the Spurs are a really fun team. And to be honest, they're probably the team that I'm cheering for in the West. Victor Wembanyama is just such a phenom. And it's so much fun to watch him play. The rest of the Spurs have been playing great, by the way. This is a very well-coached team. They play fundamental basketball. It reminds you a bit of the Spurs of old. Good passing, fewer turnovers, good defense. But you can't talk about the Spurs and not focus on Wemby, because if the Spurs are going to take the crown and take the throne from the Thunder, it's going to be because of him. And I've made this point a few times, but I'm going to use this as an excuse to make it again. Wemby has this thing that I like to call defensive gravity. We talk about Stephen Curry having gravity on offense. Defenses are geared towards him. They have to shift and adjust around him. You have to follow him, and he creates space just with his presence. Wemby does the same thing defensively. When you see Wemby in the post, it alters players' shots. In instances where they otherwise would have maybe taken a tough layup, they dribble the ball out or kick it out or something like that. Wemby is a juggernaut on defense, and on offense, his game is only improving. He's a better three-point shooter now than he was last year. So I would love to see him go on a run, you know, take Oklahoma City down and claim the West for the Spurs. But your number three contender, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I sat with this one for a while because I was debating a few teams here in the three spot. But Anthony Edwards is playing with so much confidence right now, and the rest of that team is playing really well around him. A lot of them have really established their roles at this point. This is a team that's been together for a few years. Rudy Gobert is taking a step back on offense, but still maintained a bit of his defensive tenacity. Jaden McDaniels, once again, great season. Julius Randle playing a little back, but still playing well. And I think this is a team that's really well built, really well coached, and absolutely has the ability to go on a run. And now the fourth spot, because it wouldn't be one of my lists if I left this team out, the Los Angeles Lakers. So this is more of an anticipatory prediction, which I guess, you know, is a bit redundant, but this is anticipation more than it is how I feel about the Lakers now, because the way the Lakers are playing right now, I don't believe they're contenders. They do not know how to play together. They're missing some key, you know, contributions on specific ends. Their rebounding has been inconsistent. They've had issues defensively as a team, turnovers, endgame execution, all that stuff. But I still believe that as this season closes, if you have Luka Doncic and LeBron James, that can be enough to make you a contender. And that they are capable of understanding this roster as this season has gone on and will make the necessary adjustments needed to improve. Also, once you get to the playoffs, those rotations shorten. So the fact that the Lakers don't have a ton of depth, that can be made up for. I also think we've seen LeBron take a big step back this year, just objectively. I think maybe he's been saving some of that energy for a burst in the playoffs. He's shown multiple times that he's capable of going on stretches of really great play. So I think the Lakers are going to, at the very least, give one of these contenders a real tough shot. It'll depend on how the bracket falls, but I think the Lakers are contenders. Now, first teams out, the Nuggets and the Rockets. Those were two that I was really considering having in both the 3 and the 4 spot. The Nuggets, because Nikola Jokic is the best player in basketball right now. He's averaging a triple-double for the season. He's just an unstoppable force on offense. He's that entire team. But I just don't believe in the rest of the Nuggets. I think Jamal Murray can be great. I think Aaron Gordon can be great in spots. But I don't know if I believe in their coaching at this point. I don't know if I believe in anybody on their bench. So that's why I left them out. The Rockets, that one was tough, but that one's just because I think the Rockets have a ceiling. I think that the Rockets may have a higher floor than the Lakers do because I think the Rockets are more well-structured. Their defense is better. They're an established team. Kevin Durant has fit in really well. Alperen Şengün's playing at a high level. But I don't think this is a team that can win a championship. I think that they've had a lot of issues recently. There was a scandal online with Kevin Durant talking trash about some of his teammates. I just don't know if I believe in my heart that the Houston Rockets can win as presently constructed. I think that they need another piece. So, that's the West. The Oklahoma City Thunder sit on the throne wearing the crown. House Spurs are the top contenders, and House Timberwolves and Lakers are trying to get in that conversation as well. All right, moving on to the East, the Eastern Kingdom of the NBA. Sitting on the throne right now, the Detroit Pistons. I love this Pistons team, and they are shockingly underrated for a team that has the best record in the East, has one of the best records in the NBA, has a superstar, has a really good bench, has a really good coach. They just don't really get talked about in the media that much, and it's disappointing. I would love for Cade Cunningham to get a little more love. He has been truly unbelievable this season, and he was great last year, and he's going to be first-team All-NBA this year. He might win MVP for reasons that we'll talk about in a few minutes, but this Pistons team does not have a lot of weaknesses. The biggest thing you could point to is that they just don't have a ton of experience. And, you know, they haven't gone on deep playoff runs. And it's hard for teams to do that when you haven't. Because in the NBA, very frequently, you win in steps. You know, you build a team. You make the playoffs. You break in. Then you win a round or two. You go on the deep playoff run. And then you can win a championship. That's how it's been for pretty much the whole history of the NBA. But in an Eastern Conference where it feels wide open right now, and the Pistons have proven to be consistent, to be able to beat good teams, to play well in big spots, why shouldn't they be the favorites in the East? Why shouldn't they be the Kings in the East? So that's my take on Detroit. I think that they're sitting on the throne right now in the Eastern Conference. All right, your top contenders, House Knicks. This may come from a little bit of bias because I love the Knicks. I'm a fan of the Heat, but I have a soft spot for the Knicks. I grew up in New York. I love Jalen Brunson and all of them. But this Knicks team has been following that exact path that I described moments ago. Once they brought in Brunson, once they brought in McCall, OG, built this team, Cat, all of them. They made the playoffs, they broke in, they went on a few playoff runs that came up short, they made an Eastern Conference Finals run, and now they have the opportunity to compete for a championship. And I absolutely believe that they can. Jalen Brunson has shown that in the playoffs, he can play like a true superstar. The rest of the team has shown that they can compete defensively, they can play with anybody, and they have a bit of a sort of resilience in big spots that you have to love. Karl Anthony Towns is the X factor for this team. Excuse me. Karl Anthony Towns is the X factor for this team because he is supposed to be their second best player. And he has come up short in a lot of spots. And they need consistency from all their top guys. They need high-level production in the playoffs. And if you're playing Detroit, who has a bit of a weakness at the center spot, that should be something that you can exploit. All right, the number three contenders, House Celtics. And this one, I got to say, the Celtics scare me more than any other team in the East. And the Eastern Conference should be nervous and monitoring things very closely. Because the Celtics have been really good this year. Jaylen Brown seems to have taken things to another level. He's averaging nearly 30 points per game. He's in MVP talks. He might be first-team All-NBA as well. And naturally, the rest of the Celtics have been playing great. They're well-coached. They make threes. They play great defense, high-efficiency basketball. All the stuff that we've seen from Boston for the last few years. And on top of that, they might be adding Jason Tatum. They might just be inserting a top 10 player in the NBA into their lineup sometime before the playoffs. That should be terrifying. If any team at the top of these conferences was just going to add a top 10 player, we would probably say that makes them the favorites. So we'll see what Jason Tatum looks like in his recovery. We'll see how late into the season he starts talking about coming back. If he does end up coming back, it's a little uncertain. But the Celtics are a force to be reckoned with. And as we get later on in the year, I think it'll be interesting to see how this team develops. All right, last. I really had a tough one. I got to say, this was a really tough decision to pick a fourth contender in the East because I'm not even sure that I believe in this contender. But I'm going to say House Sixers because we've gotten stretches of Joel Embiid playing. We've gotten a lot of stretches of him not playing. He's hurt again. We don't know what his status will be in the playoffs. But despite that, the Sixers have been rolling a bit. Tyrese Maxey has had the best season of his career. VJ Ejikomb has been unbelievable as a rookie. Paul George has been playing well for the role that he's taken on. I think the Sixers are more fundamentally sound than a lot of these other teams. And if you get that boost of Joel Embiid being healthy and playing at his best in the playoffs, then they're a contender. So there's a lot that would need to happen for the season to work out for the Sixers, but no reason to believe they're not contenders here at this point. At least in the event Embiid gets healthy and everything does work out. So first team looking in is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this is a team that for the same reason I left the Rockets out, I just think this team has a ceiling. I don't think the Cavs can win the championship. I think when you're depending on a lot of players who have kind of shrunk in the playoffs a bit, that's not a good sign. They haven't really gone on deep playoff runs. And the Cavs have been really good in the regular season. They've been a lot like Donovan Mitchell's first team with the Jazz when they would have these great regular season runs and then max out in the second round. But I don't know. I don't see Cleveland pulling this one off. So, recap in the Eastern Kingdom of the conference. Sitting on the throne are the Pistons, led by Cade Cunningham, the potential MVP. House Knicks and House Celtics trying to contend the looming return of Sir Jason Tatum. Maybe, a big swing in the East. The Sixers trying to make a push, and the Cavs, the first team looking in. All right, that was our NBA recap so far of the season. We're going to talk about some NBA draft stuff later on in the year, but first, we're going to talk about some NFL draft stuff, and we'll get to that right after this.
Might you be buzzed when you suddenly love everything?
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends.
Are you a victim of the campus cough or other common symptoms of a cold or sore throat? The accredited University Health Center, located right across from the Stamp Union, can be of assistance. Make an online appointment at www.myuhc.umb.edu. You can receive primary care, reproductive health care, mental health care, dental health, immunization, and much more. What are you waiting for? Schedule your next appointment now.
All right, welcome back in. In the midst of this close to the NBA regular season and college basketball regular season, we have the NFL draft coming up. So, there's been a lot of news. We're going to get into it. And we're going to start off by just talking generally about the NFL Combine. Because every year, there's conversation about it. There's a lot of hype around it. And there's also a lot of questioning about what we really get out of it. So I want to talk about a few stages of the Combine and what they actually represent. First of all, the Combine as a whole, I feel, is a bit of a pass-fail test. And if you're a scout, and you've been watching a player for their whole college career, and you think that they're good or you think that they're bad, and they go to the combine, if you think a player's good and they have a good combine, I don't think that's going to raise your stock. But if they think you're good and you have a bad combine, that could really hurt you. And that's why we've seen recently a lot of players decide, I don't want to participate in the combine. I'm going to leave it up to my tape, or I'm only going to do certain workouts at my pro day where I can do it in an environment I'm comfortable with. But when you put a lot of these players who have so much on the line in an environment, in a stadium they likely haven't played in before, surrounded and competing with guys they haven't played with before, things can get tight. Things can get dicey. On the flip side, if you're someone who scouts aren't very fond of, and you go to the combine and you perform poorly, that doesn't really, you know, that's not going to have as much of an impact. But if you go and perform well, that could boost your stock and potentially earn you an NFL career. Think about this. We have seen, there was this video of a player, I don't remember his name, I wish I remembered his name, he was a smaller prospect. But he ran, I think, a 4.33 in the 40-yard dash the other day. And he broke down and was crying. And what that does for your family, if you're somebody who, even if you're going to make the NFL, but you're going to be a mid-round draft pick, and you run that fast, all of a sudden, teams are interested in you. You can earn a lot more money. That could be really big for your family, for your town, your community, for your life, everything. So it's a scary opportunity for players who are viewed in high regard, but it's an incredible opportunity for players who aren't. So there's a lot to like about the combine. There's a lot to be concerned about. But there are also a few things to note, because a lot of the workouts in the combine are really interesting. The main one's the 40-yard dash. That's what people look to every year. It's the most exciting. Who can run the fastest? That's just our natural innate human instinct to want to see who can run the fastest. You know, it's just how we work. But something else we've noticed is a lot of the guys who have slower 40 times than you'd expect are much faster. Saquon ran a 40-yard dash, I think, in the mid four fours. Odell Beckham Jr., mid four fours. When you watch those guys play, it felt like they were flying. Tyreek Hill never ran an official 40-yard dash until into his career. But he certainly, we know he was probably the fastest player ever, and he was running in the high 4.2s. We've seen players faster than him in the combine that wouldn't be faster than him in an in-game situation. So scouts think about in-game speed a lot more than they do a sprint. The other ones that I'm really interested in are a lot of the agility drills. Four cone, you know, the ins and outs, like all the, if you're a receiver working on routes, things that measure your athleticism. Vertical jump, broad jump, not as much, but it's still good to see. You want to have people who are very athletic and who can move quick, because one of the biggest things that contribute to players being a bust in the NFL are guys who can't move their feet. And you've got all these great traits and you're able to dominate at a college level because you're not playing against great athletes. But if you've got guys with quick feet who are faster than you, you're going to get cooked. So those are, I think, the most important ones to look for in the combine. They're not the flashiest, but that's, I think, what's important. The other thing is the quarterback drills are, of course, absurd. And the same is true for the pro day. And every single year, I'm curious to see who it's going to be this year, but every single year, quarterbacks throw to unguarded receivers without a pass rush. And people are like, oh my gosh, did you see that throw? He was rolling out to his right. He threw it 50 yards downfield. And it's all stuff that I'm thinking, yeah, I would hope that you're able to do that. And that kind of brings it back to the pass-fail mindset, where if you're a quarterback and you're missing a lot of these throws, that's a really bad sign. Because if you're an NFL quarterback and you're unguarded or unrushed, you should be able to make throws almost every time, pretty consistently. So, on the other hand, you get a lot of scouts every year, and there's always one quarterback who's usually white, who has some crazy pro day throws, and his stock flies up because people are desperate to move them up their boards and to find some excuse to. And I'm telling you right now, that's a trap. Whoever it turns out to be, whoever has the amazing pro day compilation that goes viral, I'm telling you, it's a trap. So that's my take on the combine. It's a very complex conversation. And if you're a scout, you need to know how to read it. And a lot of scouting departments in the NFL don't really know what they're doing. They don't know what to look for. There was a video that went viral of Jets head coach Aaron Glenn falling asleep during the combine in his box. Just fell asleep. What are you doing? You need to be studying these guys. You need to be prepared. They have a top 10 pick. They have two first round picks. They've got multiple picks in the mid rounds. They need to be active. They need to be aware. It's not just, all right, yeah, we're probably not going to draft this guy, but what if another team wants to trade up for him? You need to know the strengths and weaknesses of these players so you know what other teams might be targeting them. It's all chess. It's all, every little bit matters. Everything contributes to winning in the NFL. Every little bit. And you need to be able to have an understanding of how the game works. It's what makes organizations like the Ravens and the Steelers and the Packers good consistently every single season. Because they have good scouting departments and sound foundations. So, if you're a serious franchise, you take the combine seriously. You take what you are able to learn and you apply it. Okay, now the fun part. I want to talk about specific prospects right now. Because this draft class has gotten a lot of buzz. Everyone's thinking about the 2027 class, which is riddled with superstars. But this class is riddled with starters. And I want to talk about a few of the key guys, starting, of course, with the presumptive number one pick, Fernando Mendoza. So Mendoza decided to skip the combine. He's only going to throw at his pro day for a lot of reasons that I explained just earlier. And I think it's a good decision. Like I said, the combine is pass-fail. Fernando Mendoza is the presumptive number one pick in the draft. He has absolutely nothing to gain from throwing in the combine or doing any of that stuff beyond interviewing with teams and doing some workouts. He, I think, is going to be a superstar in the league, or at the very least a high-level starter. I think he's going to be on that level of guys like Jared Goff, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, CJ Stroud, in that range. And I think that if you believe that, that's a home run first overall pick in the draft. And for a Raiders team that is desperate for a franchise quarterback, Derek Carr has been their best one for over the last couple decades. This is a great opportunity. And Fernando Mendoza, I think, is the perfect fit for this culture. First of all, he is not the party type. And when you're Las Vegas and you've got the first overall pick, you want to make sure that your quarterback's not going to be, you know, out in the town. But if there's anything we know about Fernando Mendoza, it's that he's going to be spending his time at practice, that he's going to go home, read his Bible, and that's it. That's what he does. So I'm very excited to see him with this team. He also, by the way, speaks fluent Spanish, which in Las Vegas is a real benefit for the fans and the culture and all that. So that's just a fun note as well. But Mendoza is not the craziest athlete. He can move, but he's got a really good feel and eye for the game. And he's got a good mind for the game. He sees defense as well. He's a good processor. And he's accurate, which are all really important things at the NFL level. And if you're the Raiders, you have to think about the fit. And I think the fit should excite you. Because all of a sudden, this Raiders team has a big three on offense. They've got an identity. You've got Mendoza. He's going to be throwing to Brock Bowers. And he's going to be handing it off to Ashton Jeanty. Those are their last three first-round picks. Those are going to be three stars. That's how they're going to try to win. Now, you need Coach Kubiak to really develop a system around Mendoza that are going to play to his strengths. I'm confident he'll be able to. We've seen him do it with Darnold, Geno, a bunch of players. But they also need a defense and an offensive line. And this is a very key offseason for them, because the Raiders don't need to be competing this year for a championship. They need to develop a foundation and an identity. But you also need to protect Mendoza. You do not want him getting beat up. You do not want him getting hurt. Joe Burrow got hurt his rookie season. A lot of players got hurt their rookie season. J.J. McCarthy got hurt his rookie season. Penix hurt his rookie season. You want to protect him. You don't want to get him beat up. This Raiders O-line has been terrible. And if you're Coach Kubiak, you're good at developing schemes on offense. Hopefully this offensive line can hold up. And the defense as well would be nice, by the way. They really don't have one of those. Next, Sonny Styles. You want to talk about passing the combine and raising your stock somehow. There is a scenario with the combine I suppose I didn't mention. Because if you're a top prospect and you do well at the combine, that's not going to change much for you. But if you're a top prospect and you're unbelievable at the combine, now all of a sudden that can have a real impact. And Sonny Styles was just an unreal athlete all around. He had one of the greatest performances that we've ever seen at the combine. He is a 6'5" linebacker out of Ohio State. He's 244 pounds and ran a 4.46 40-yard dash. He had a 44-inch vertical jump and an 11-foot broad jump. He is explosive. He is huge. He is strong, and he is fast. And for a player who a lot of the talk around him was, you know, he's sound on film. He's a good fundamental player, but is the athleticism there? Can he play with these NFL guys? And he answered that question with a resounding yes, to the point where all of a sudden, a guy who was looked at maybe in the back of the top 10 or in the mid-teens is almost a consensus top 5 prospect. And that's thrilling. Couple places I'd love to see Sonny Styles. Really any of the teams in the top 5. I think the Jets would love to have him. The Giants would definitely love to have him. Although the Giants have other needs right now. The Titans. All these teams would benefit. Any team past the Giants would be getting a steal, in my opinion. This guy is going to be a freak in the NFL. He is an athlete. He is smart. and he is a leader on defense. This is a guy where if he pans out, he can be the captain of your defense for a long time. So congratulations, Sonny Styles, on an amazing combine performance. Speaking of amazing performances, this one we saw coming. Jeremiah Love. And he is one of the most fascinating prospects in the draft for a lot of reasons. Every few years, we get one of these star running backs. And you know they're going to be stars. You know they're incredibly talented. And it's a trap every single time for the team that drafts them. And that's for a few reasons. First of all, running backs, while incredibly talented, at least top 10 running backs, while incredibly talented, are not often main contributors to winning. And if you're a team that's drafting so high, you have to decide if you are a running back away. And most teams picking that high are not. If you are drafting in the top 5 or the top 10, it means you have holes throughout your roster that need to be fixed. You can have successful running games without the exciting young superstar running back. And I get the temptation, but you have to hold off. Now, Jeremiah Love has been mocked to a lot of different teams. And it makes sense. He not only is an incredibly smart runner, where he can see the offensive line really well, he knows which holes to hit, he understands the playbook, but he's fast, he's explosive, he's hard to bring down, and he's a great receiver. So there's a lot to like there. But there's a lot to like about Jeremiah Love, but I'm going to say the team that drafts him needs to be later in the draft. It should be in the later top 10 or the teens or something like that. I don't want to see him go that early. One thing that's another positive for Love is that he's only had a couple hundred touches in college. A lot of the top running backs over the last few years, guys like Saquon, McCaffrey, Bijan Gibbs, they had a lot of touches in college. And Love is going to come in a little fresher, which is nice for the running back position. You don't want him to have accumulated a lot of hits over their career. The current favorite to draft Love is the New York Giants. And I've been saying very confidently that this is a smokescreen, but all of the reporting is about the Giants pursuing a running back. I really want to believe it's a smokescreen and that Harbaugh's new front office is trying to bait teams to either bolster trade offers or to compete for the wrong guys or to not expect the Giants to try to sign certain players. It makes no sense for the Giants to draft Love. It's the exact same trap we fell into with Saquon. And he had a couple great seasons. He had a lot of mediocre seasons. We won one playoff game because we weren't ready for a star running back. Guys like Quentin Nelson went a few picks later. He would have been the much better choice at second overall. So I don't think the Giants draft Love. I think it's a smokescreen. They've got Cam Scadaboo, Tyrone Tracy, which is a great running back duo. Tracy the receiving guy, Scat the power guy. They've got a great friendship, a great dynamic. I think the Giants should have their running game pretty sound already. They had a great run blocking scheme last year on the offensive line. There's no reason to shake it up and draft Love fifth overall. I want to see him get drafted by the Chiefs. And all the Chiefs fans and the Chiefs media is saying, no, we need an offensive tackle or we need an edge rusher or something like that. And I'm okay, whatever. I want to see the Chiefs offense go off again. And I want to see Patrick Mahomes with a good running game for the first time in his career. And I just wonder what that would look like to have such a talented duo in the backfield. So I would love to see Love with the Chiefs. Moving on. The edge rusher battle. So these are the guys that Chiefs media wants him to draft. Reuben Bain from Miami and David Bailey from Texas Tech. These are really good prospects. They're both really good athletes. Bain was more productive in college. Bailey's a little more of an athlete. I lean towards David Bailey as a better player personally. I think Bain has probably a higher ceiling, but he's got short arms. He's got some other physical concerns. I'm a little nervous about some of the ways his games are going to translate to the NFL. I think David Bailey is going to come in as a little more of a sure thing. I think he's going to have more of an impactful rookie year, no matter where these two go. But I just think David Bailey is an incredibly talented prospect. He's explosive as an edge rusher. He's sound as a run defender. Whichever team drafts both of these guys are going to be in a great spot. Reuben Bain's been mocked second overall, third overall. I don't know if I would take him that high. If they both get past the Giants and get into that back spot, the Commanders, the Bengals, all of them, the Chiefs, I would go Bailey first. Lastly, one more note on the combine. I just want to shout out Ohio State because seemingly all of the top prospects are going to OSU. And I don't know what their player development program is like over there, but they're doing an unbelievable job. I mean, Sonny Styles, who I mentioned earlier, Ohio State. Carnell Tate, a wide receiver who's been mocked in the top five, Ohio State. Caleb Downs, the superstar safety, Ohio State. Their cornerback, who has been unbelievable and is going up on boards, Ohio State. A lot of these players come from that school. Carnell Tate, by the way, really fascinating prospect. He had a bit of a slower combine. He ran in the 4.53, I believe. But he's a physical receiver, great hands. I don't think I want the Giants to draft him. I would rather the Giants pick Caleb Downs, who has been mocked at that spot as well. Caleb Downs, I think, is one of the best players in this draft. I think it's Mendoza, I think it's Love, and I think it's Downs as the three best guys. And I think Downs has displayed such a unique ability to be versatile. He lined up all over the field at OSU. He's an athlete, and he's a leader on defense. So for a Giants team that desperately needs help in the secondary, he can kind of fit the Kyle Hamilton role that John Harbaugh established in Baltimore. You need that leader in the secondary. So a lot of really great prospects, a lot of really great fun prospects. As the combine continues to wrap up, as the pro days go on, as we see what teams do in free agency, how that influences their draft decisions, if any trades play out, it's all very exciting. Love NFL draft news. We're going to come back with a segment that I like to call High Speed Headlines right after this.
Do you like the outdoors? Join the Maryland Adventure Program. This is a student-powered adventure that promotes personal growth and overall wellness. You can tackle a 50-foot wall through rock climbing or gather a group of friends to experience the challenge course. To get more information, log on to crs.umd.edu/Maryland Adventure Program.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean on Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week, at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
All right, welcome back in. So as I mentioned, it's been a while since we've had a show. A lot of news has happened. So we are going to run through a segment that I like to call High Speed Headlines. I'm going to set a 10-minute timer. We're going to get through 10 different topics, and we'll see how it goes. All right, we are off. So first, Aaron Rodgers being considered for return with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think this is a bad decision all around. Rodgers already said he did not really have interest in coming back to the Steelers. People have been rumoring a reunion with him and Mike McCarthy after their time in Green Bay. I don't think that's a good idea. That kind of ended really poorly. I also just don't think any team should sign Aaron Rodgers right now. I don't think there's a benefit. If you're a team that needs a quarterback, draft one or trade for one or get anybody with any kind of promise, because Rodgers has at most 1 year left, and there is no reason, unless you're trying to mentor some rookie, to make him your franchise guy. So, sorry, Aaron Rodgers, I don't believe in you. Next, questions in the media about if Justin Herbert is still elite. I mean, he's had a couple really rough playoff runs. I don't know how you can call Justin Herbert elite. And I was a huge Herbert fan, and I still am. Coming out of college, his rookie year, his first few seasons, I believed in him. But you have to earn being elite. Being an elite quarterback of the NFL means that you can win at a high level and play at your best in the big moments. Justin Herbert hasn't proven that. So, no, I don't believe Justin Herbert's elite. He absolutely can become elite as he continues to grow in this system with Harbaugh when they get their two-star offensive lineman back, which really kneecapped them last year. But until he does, no, Justin Herbert is not elite. So David Montgomery was traded to the Texans. This really surprised me, like a lot, because a huge part of the Lions' identity has been their running back duo. And the fact that they had Sonic and Knuckles, Gibbs and Montgomery, balanced running attack, their guys were fresh, they were explosive, their offensive line was sturdy. And what this trade tells me is that the Lions are attempting a soft reset of their culture. And I think that that's interesting because they're going to depend more on Gibbs. He's going to be getting a lot more touches. And I think they're going to try to reshape their offensive line. This Lions offensive line was one of the best in the league for a few years. And last year, they really took a step back. So seeing what moves they make this offseason, I think, will tell us a lot about the direction the Lions are trying to go. But I do feel bad for Montgomery. I feel like this was a bit of a rough shake for him going to Houston. The Texans are a good team, but we know the kind of fun and family they had in Detroit. We'll see how it works out. Next, Cowboys leaning towards prioritizing George Pickens over Brandon Aubrey this offseason. This is one of my favorite conversations to have right now, because George Pickens, star receiver, physical player, great athlete, great hands, had a great season. But Brandon Aubrey is the best kicker in the NFL. And if you're Dallas, you have to think, look, George Pickens has a history with issues with consistency. This was the first time he really played at the highest level, and it was a contract year. So that's something to worry about. Also, paying a lot of money to two receivers does not often work out unless your quarterback's on a rookie contract, which Dak Prescott certainly is not. And their offense is good almost no matter what. If Dak is healthy and CeeDee is healthy, the Cowboys are usually fine. So I don't think you really need Pickens. Brandon Aubrey is one of the most unique and talented players in the NFL. And I don't think you can afford to let him go.
when you have Aubrey on your team and an ability to hit 60-plus yard field goals consistently, the touchback in the NFL, you start the game at the 35-yard line. If you get one or two first downs, you're in field goal range. That is a premium that Aubrey gives you that almost no other kicker in the league does, except for maybe Cam Little in Jacksonville, but his accuracy is not on the level that Aubrey's is. So I just believe that you should prioritize Aubrey. I think that it is much harder to find Brandon Aubrey than it is a lot of other key positions in the NFL. So I would go with him. Next. Oh, we got to speed up here. Trey Young set to make his debut on Thursday for the Wizards. I'm excited to see this. I know a lot of Wizards fans. A lot of you guys are Wizards fans. It's going to be interesting to see how he fits in with the young guys. Alex Saar, Keyshawn George, the rest of the rookies, the young players they've been developing, the culture they've been building. This is the first step in the future for Washington because they gave up a lot for Trey. And he's going to be one of the centerpieces of this franchise next year for a Wizards team that believes they can at least contend in the East. And I think it'll be fun to see how this plays out. Next, the Chiefs cut Jawan Taylor. This one surprised me. He's been their left tackle for a few years. I think it points to the Chiefs maybe going offensive line in the draft. There's that one really good tackle that people have been talking about. Fanu, I believe. That could be a good look for Kansas City. Next, Jason Tatum, rumored to be returning in the near future. So this one, I mentioned this earlier at the top of the show. This should terrify every other team in the East. Because if you look at any of the top contenders and you say, we're just going to add a top 10 player in the league to that roster, that would make them probably the favorites. And that's what's happening to Boston. You cannot say at this point that the Celtics, as presently constructed, are not contenders in the East with the way Jaylen Brown and the rest of that team is playing, let alone if Tatum comes back and plays at a level, even if it's 85% of what he was last year, that is a huge boost for Boston. Next, the U.S. hockey gold medal teams were honored at the State of the Union. Some of them have declined White House visits, and I'm just super happy for both teams. And this was a huge moment for America, their first gold since the Miracle on Ice. The women's team overcoming a lot of adversity, and I'm just proud of America, and winning that felt unifying, and in a time where there are so few chances for the entire country to come together and cheer for something together, that's what the Olympics did, and I was really happy to see that play out. Next, and last, hey, we really caught up, Kevin Durant closing in on Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. This one is really interesting because what does it mean for Kevin Durant's legacy? Now, I don't think it's going to raise him all-time or anything, but it reaffirms a lot of what we know about KD. First of all, he's one of the greatest scorers of all time, if not one of the best scorers, if not the best scorer of all time. He's one of the most well-rounded scorers. He can shoot. He can drive, he can make a mid-range, he's got a really deep bag. But when we talk about Durant's legacy, it's hard not to think about winning because that's what a lot of us automatically go to with legacies. And for Kevin Durant to pass Michael Jordan is obviously an honor. And by the way, you know, we'll get to this in a second, but I just hope that we get one more late playoff push from Kevin Durant, is all I'm trying to say. He's a couple games away now from passing Jordan. It's going to be very exciting. A huge accomplishment for Kevin Durant. And he deserves all the flowers that he gets. What I think is interesting about this is the Michael Jordan aspect. Because people think about Michael Jordan in a mythical light. And they think, yeah, he's the greatest player ever. You know, he's by far the greatest scorer ever, all this stuff, XYZ. Jordan played for not a very long time compared to a lot of the other all-time greats. Kareem played 20 years, Kobe 20 years, Duncan 20 years, LeBron, he's in year 23. A lot of these all-time greats had really established longevity, and Jordan did not. He played 11 full seasons. He was an all-star 11 times with the Bulls. 11 times. LeBron is 22-time first team all, or 22-time All-NBA. That's double the career of Michael Jordan. So when we talk about longevity and all-time debates, I think it should mean something. If you want to talk about peak, that's fine. But if you're talking about the peak of a player that lasted 5 or 6 years versus the peak of a player that lasted a decade, I think it holds a little more weight. And I think that should be something that we think about. All right, we've got about 2.5 minutes here left in our show. And we're going to take a step back on the NBA as a whole. Because there is a lot of calling for the 65-game rule for awards to be abolished. And if you're not familiar with what that is, over the last 10 years, there's been a trend where star players begun to rest in games in the regular season, where they would say, look, I played all 82, and by the time I got to the playoffs, I was burnt out or I was banged up. So I'm only going to play X amount of 60 games, or I'm going to take this amount of games off, or I'm not going to play back-to-backs or whatever it was. And it really hurt the league. So what they said was, all right, do whatever you want, but if you don't play 65 games in a season, you're not eligible for any awards. And the load management over the last few years has not been as egregious. We haven't seen as many stars sitting out in key games or being ruled out with soft injuries or whatever it may be. But what we have seen is a lot of the best players actually get hurt. And what we're going to notice is at the end of this season, guys like Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Luka Doncic, Victor Wembanyama are going to have played 61, 63 games because they missed a few weeks here or there with an injury. And none of the best players in the league are going to be recognized with awards. Cade Cunningham is having an unbelievable season. He's probably going to win MVP. Would he win MVP if all those other guys I just mentioned were eligible? Probably not. So it's something to really consider. They're looking for ways to enforce playing the game at a high level. They're throwing out some kind of absurd tanking rule option right now that they might implement. Adam Silver's got a lot to workshop. I like him as a commissioner, but this is a very precarious time for him with these two decisions that he's working on. So I would adjust the 65-game rule. I just want to see, when we're looking back at the history of the NBA, we should be able to see who won the awards fairly. We shouldn't be able to be looking at this kind of season and say, oh, I guess Jokic just fell off that year, or SGA wasn't as good that year. Because they weren't. They were awesome. But they just got hurt a couple times and weren't eligible to be on any of the All-NBA teams. So I just want to respect the league.